Hello and welcome to Reflections. I'm your girl Nadine Edwards. Thank you for joining. I hope as you listen today, you'll be inspired, uplifted, motivated in your continued pursuit of becoming a better version of yourself. This past weekend, I watched a movie by the name of 13 Lives, which is a movie based on a true story. It took place just recently. When I say recently, 2018, summer thereabout in north of Thailand. Many of you might have heard of the Tham Luang cave rescue experience where 13 youngsters were trapped in the cave for how many days before they were rescued. So I just thought that I'll take the opportunity to share this, a summary of the movie with you. Spoiler alert for those of you who have not yet watched it, and pretty much share with you some takeaways that I got from the movie. So on the 23rd of June 2018, 12 junior soccer team players between the ages of 11 and 16 and their assistant coach, age 25, were making their way from a soccer practice match to the Tham Luang cave. But little did they know that the rain was coming that day and would have trapped them in the cave. Their parents were in the process of preparing a birthday party and was waiting for them to come home to the party. So when the parents realized that the boys weren't showing up for the party, they became concerned and made their way to the cave. How they knew they were in the cave, I don't know. I perhaps missed that information while watching the movie. But they made their way to the cave and realized that all their bikes were parked at the entrance. And so immediately they summoned the emergency services, who came immediately. Before long, the governor was on site, neighbors were on site, the parents, and everybody started rallying immediately as to how they're going to get these young boys out the cave. So the Navy SEALs, they were the ones that were on site to do the job. And it was not before long, they were all geared up in their scuba diving outfits to begin their rescue mission in the cave. So after 3 hours and 50 minutes, they were able to get 800 meters deep, or 800 meters in the cave, and had to turn back. They came out blistered at 5 a.m. in the morning because they encountered rising water levels. The water was aggressive and there were some really narrow areas in the cave that they found very difficult to navigate. So they had to come out. So by day two, the Thai authorities activated over 100 governmental agencies in an astonishing nationwide effort to rescue the boys. There were also volunteers coming on site in numbers to help get rid of the water levels that they thought was coming from underneath in the cave. But there was a water engineer who came by when he heard the news. Nobody summoned him. And with his expertise, he was able to speak with this elderly man who perhaps was in charge of the farmers who farmed close to the cave. And he was able to say to him, listen, we have to find a way to divert the water that is coming from the top that runs into the cave that is causing the flooding. And so when he had discussion with the man, the farmers had to make a sacrifice to allow the diversion onto their rice field in order to save these boys, whom they hope were alive. So on day 5, the rain was still falling. So the governor thought of summoning 2 experts he knew lived in England. One of them was an IT professional, had a 10-year-old boy, and the other was a firefighter, but they were known to be the world's best divers. So the governor of Thailand summoned them and asked if they were willing to volunteer their expertise to help rescue the boys, which they agreed to and immediately took the flight to Thailand. When they got there, they went into the cave and they were able to go as far as 600 meters, which was known as a T-junction. That took them about 3 hours and 50 minutes. When they got there, they only hear rocks started flying all over the place. And then immediately they saw water gushing through the rocks towards them with a force. And so they had to struggle to get from underneath the water and dodging the rocks. Bear in mind, they had cylinders, 2 cylinders each on either side of them, because they had to accommodate for oxygen. They had to make provision for being in the cave for hours. So imagine the hose, the regulator and all. Just imagine that little moment of unexpected catastrophe. They both agreed immediately to exit the cave. So we are seeing here now a force of nature working against them. Some of the Thailands, because you know they're into their shrines and their statues, they are their gods. And some of them were speculating that the lady, because there's a monument of a lady lying at the front of the cave with her eyes open. From afar, it appears as if she's asleep. But when you come near, you see that her beady eyes are open. One of them made her angry. Someone made her angry, and so she's crying. That is their speculation. 2 days later, that's day 7, the governor called a meeting with the Naval SEALs, the British divers, and of course other divers who were volunteers, and some US military guys who were in a neighboring land who came over to offer their services. The governor was trying to establish when would be the next date for them to go in and who will go in at that point. Because Naval SEALs men tried, they failed. The British divers tried and they failed. The Naval SEALs were saying, we can only account for our men. We can't stand the risk of these men coming from another country, going to the cave, and something happens to them. It would be bad for tourism. But there's an elderly man in the rooms who made a point that these guys have been diving under all kind of adverse circumstances, have 30 years experience, the best divers in the world. They know what they're doing. This cave is no walkover cave. Did you look at the map? And they showed them the map. This is no ordinary cave. The crevices that you have to go through and the length of it and the hours that you have to... And it's not just normal or ordinary scuba diving breathing. You have to breathe a particular way when you're underwater in that cave, the man was saying. So the governor stood up and said, listen, we're not going to go back into the cave until the rain stops and some of the water subsides, or we are able to bail out some of the water. Day 10 came. That was the 2nd of July, and the rain eased up and some of the water subsided. And so the Navy SEALs were preparing their men to go in, and the governor insisted with the leader, please allow these two British experts to go in. They know what they're doing and they will be able to get the job done. And by then, the minister needed an update. And so out of respect, he listened to the governor's recommendation. So the two British divers went back in a second time. This time the Navy SEALs leader said, okay, walk with this camera and take pictures of everything you see when you get to the boys and take pictures of them. So they eventually found them. All 13 of them were alive, though malnourished. To their amazement, they were very surprised. And I said to myself, how is it that they went in to search for these young men and brought no food? So the obvious answer was they never expected them to be alive, which came out in another scene, by the way. And so they were like, so when are we getting out of here, sir? We are hungry. And then one of the divers reassured them that several more men are going to come tomorrow. We're going to bring lots of food and we're going to get you out of here. And the other diver said, you don't know that. And so one of the divers asked them, by the way, how did you guys survive so long? And one of them answered and said, sir, we encouraged each other. Our coach encouraged us. We prayed, we meditated. That is what kept us, sir. He said, you pray, that's good. News got to the town. By now, the entire world was watching, and support was coming from all over the world. And so the news got out that the boys were alive. So the parents started celebrating, the officials were celebrating, neighbors, everybody. But this one British diver said, why are you guys celebrating? You bow down to shrines? You think that the best divers can help them? And you think that all the water pumping from the cave can help them? Don't you see? They're not going to make it. They're not going to live. They're going to all die. How are they going to come out the cave? How long will the water take to subside? How long will it take if we decide to start boring holes into this mountain? How long is it going to take before we get them out? And let's say we put them underwater. Do you think they will make it for hours underwater, scuba diving with masks on their faces? The other day when we went the first time, we had to help a youngster to get out the cave, and he almost died because he panicked underwater. I have to tell you, he hit his head and he was bleeding. He fought his way and they had to get him above water. I'm happy that there were moments in the cave where he could come up, take a breather, and then go back under to exit. When the rocks began flying, everybody who was there helping pump water exited, and he was the only one who stayed back to keep pumping the water until he see them come up. So one of them had to loan him a goggler, help him to get to the front, and then the other one go back to give the other the goggler. He panicked because he had no scuba diving experience. And can I tell you, Dennis and I, my friend, we went to Mallorca in April of this year on vacation. Dennis had his birthday and we decided to try scuba diving for the very first time. Can I tell you, it was one of the most horrific experiences of my life. I thought I was going to die that day. The guys, two lifeguards, it was five of us going on the water, This girl, she had several experiences. She recently did a course and got her certification, so she did something she was familiar with. And the other two guys who was with us, they did it at least one time before, so it was just Dennis and my experience for the first time. They gave us a brief overview and rundown of what we're to expect and how we need to breathe underwater. You never breathe through your nose, you always breathe through your mouth. When water begin to seep through your goggles, you press against your forehead, hang your head down, and then you hang your head up, and all kind of things and different instructions. So they put this heavy cylinder on my back, stones, like heavy stones around my waist, tie. Of course, they had to put a belt to secure the cylinder and the stones. So I felt really heavy walking my way to the water. So when I got to the water, now we had to float to a section where we go under. When we went under, I had to concentrate on breathing through my mouth and at the same time deal with keeping water out my goggles. Friends, I said, man, what if water starts getting in my goggles and getting in my nose and I panic and I die so deep underwater? I had to give the guy immediate signal to abort the mission. Of course, they brought Dennis and myself up because I didn't know that Dennis was panicking too. All kind of things were flowing through our minds. And in the same time, because I couldn't see him, we gave the signal, because they tell you what signal means okay, what signal means you need to go up and so forth. So we gave the signal that we need to go up. Around the same time, we were brought above water. And so here was the British guy saying, these young boys may never make it. It kind of brought a reality check to the military officials they were talking with, because of course people were on the outside still happy and gyrating about the good news that they got. Of course, the next couple of days they were back and forth bringing food to them. Can I tell you, the first day they brought food, gave them checkups. The second day when they went to bring food, four of them went. And to their realization, all the oxygen cylinders, they brought six cylinders and five of them were empty. So three of them had to stay back with the 13 youngsters and one swim his way back to the entrance to tell the others that they need help. By the way, when they were there, they tested the oxygen in the cave, which was 16. It was critically low because you need at least 21 to be safe. So that was another risky situation with the ability to survive in the cave that was working against them. The world was praying for the lives of these youngsters. So when the one guy came out to report that the others were left behind because of lack of oxygen, this brought even more concern to the parents. Everybody became concerned all over again. And they began wondering when their boys are going to come home. So while everybody was there talking and expressing their concerns, the two British guys sat somewhere in the town having a cup of tea. And one of them had a strange look on his face and the other said, you're thinking something, what are you thinking? And he says, kind of crazy. He says, what? And he says, I have a friend who's also a diver. He's a doctor, an anesthetic doctor. Maybe I should invite him over to come and join us to see, you know, how he could render his services. And he says, are you thinking what I'm thinking? He says, yeah. He says, are you crazy? He says, yeah, I know it's crazy, but it may be brilliant. Do you think he'll come as a volunteer? And he says, he might. He's like that. I think he will come. And they called him and he came over, but they never made known to him the real reason they were calling him over to help. Then they leveled with him and said, we need your expertise. He says, I'm an anesthetic. You know that. They said, we know. We need. He says, are you crazy? It's insane. It's unethical. It's illegal. They will die. Besides, this has never been done before. You're talking about knocking them out and moving with them underwater for hours. If we give them too much, they may never wake, considering the fact that their body temperatures will drop underwater. And if we give them too little and they wake up and realize they're underwater, they're going to panic. He says, no, I'm not doing that. Day 15 came. And of course, the Navy SEALs were back and forth with food. And so this day, two of them decided to go in. One decided to bring some diving gears because they're thinking of ways and means now to get them out. The plan wasn't finalized, but they started bringing gears, perhaps to keep them warm. I don't know. So two of them decided to go in. The one with some diving gears was in the back and the other was in the front. And of course, while they were going through the very narrow section, once you exit, you give the indication, I'm okay. So the one in front got the indication from the one behind, I'm okay, and he went ahead. But there was a cord, the cord that is used to navigate the route to the boys. It had a little loose gap or belly, you call it belly. It hung in the crease of his cylinder that he had on his back. And so he got a little stuck. But because his hand couldn't reach behind his shoulder to relieve himself, he detached the belt to get the cylinder off his back, took the regulator from his mouth, hung it between something, and by the time he loosed the rope, the regulator started losing air because, I guess, in his effort to remove it, it began losing a lot of air. So by the time he got it back in, he never had enough to either go to the other guy or go back. So he died underwater. So I said to myself, oh my goodness, here comes death now. So when this dead body was pulled from the cave, fear hung over many people. And so the anesthetic doctor now began to rethink this crazy decision that he and his two other British friends discussed. And so they brought it to the attention of the government or the government officials. They called a meeting and made known the only possible way at this point that they needed to explore. He says, here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to give them the anesthetic and treat them as packages. That was the operative word, friends. Packages. So the governor says, you mean we're bringing out casualties? The doctor said, yes. We're not expecting them to come out alive. And so they had to swear, everybody in the room had to swear to secrecy that this will not be spoken. And so the plan was to rescue four at a time. Five divers were going to go in. The anesthetic doctor, the two British and two others. So they brought extra cylinders, spaced them out along the way. And they also spaced out themselves to preserve their energy in the whole operation of transporting these quote-unquote packages. So three went to the boys, anesthetic and two. And the first quote-unquote package, at some point, it seemed as if he was going to wake up. And then when the diver who was transporting him realized, he dropped the needle underwater. So he had to put the boy against the wall and go under the water to find the needle, which he did, thank God. And when he came back up, the boy's eyes were open. But because he was still under the drug, he never made any particular retaliation or fight. And he was able to stick him again immediately and he went right back into the coma. So when the paramedics or the medical officials and everybody at the front saw this first body come out and he was still breathing, they said his vitals are stable. Every single one of them, as they come out, were immediately rushed via helicopter to the hospital. So they were not able to provide the parents with any news because they needed to have every single boy from the cave to be able to make any form of report to the parents, which I think was very strategic. So day one, they completed the four. Bear in mind, this operation then was supposed to take 4 days, but they had to cut it to three because there was going to be the end of the monsoon season, which would bring more rains. But on day three, rain came. So on day three, five youngsters would have been rescued this day. This would have been day 19. I tell you, it was highly risky. I forgot to even mention this, that one of the boys, the smallest in size, had a very funny shaped face. So on day one, they realized that the mask couldn't fit, so they had to put in a special order for him. So on day three, when they brought this little pink goggles or face mask, it still couldn't fit. And they looked at each other in silence as if to say, the possibility lies that we may lose one. And I said, oh my goodness. This little boy's mother was the one who was so vocal through it all, demanding answers from the authorities, worrying about her boy, because the boy didn't even come from that country. He was an illegal immigrant, or he came over on some border or something. They mention it in the movie. So his mother was more vocal and worried. And one of the men looked at the mask and he turned it and he looked at it and he says, what can I do to this mask? And he put it on and squeezed it as much as he could, and they just transported the package. And can I tell you, all 13 youngsters came out alive. And not one of the rescue guys who undertook that mission was injured. I saw a miracle printed all over this movie. I do not know how much you believe in God and how strong your faith is, but I saw miracle all over this movie. The number of days they went without food, the oxygen level that was in the cave, the area that they were in never became overwhelmed with water. By the way, they were elevated on a rock, and there's something symbolic about the rock. And so coming from this story, I just have a few spiritual lessons that I gleaned from watching this movie. This is a recent happening, 2018. Powerful. By the way, they produced the movie as close as they possibly could to the real events, because when I looked at real clippings, it looked almost exact to how they were being transported out the cave. So lesson number one, there are times when we're in trouble and we pray for help. And when we pray for help, we feel like we need to help God. You know why many of us think that way? Because too often we allow people to infiltrate our thought process with the saying that God help those who help themselves. But it's not all the time God needs our help. That's why Psalm 46 verse 10 says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the Eden. I will be exalted in the earth." There are times when God needs us to be still. Just rest in Him. Just wait upon Him and let Him fight the battles. If you're having problems with your boss or a co-worker, let God fight your battles. You pray and let God fight your battles. You're having problems with your spouse or your children, let God fight your battles. Whatever the situation, if God is telling you, be still, be still. Because these boys had to be still. God never needed their input because God was very present, and the experts never needed their input. They had to be in a stilled position to be able to live. And the experts didn't fail because God was present. God will not fail you. Be still. While you wait, be patient. Because after the boys realized that there was really hope with the first appearance of the two British divers, they now became anxious and impatient, and they just wanted to be out. And the coach had to say, close your eyes and just breathe. Breathe. And calm them down and say, help is going to come. Remain hopeful. You'll be out of here soon. So there are times when we pray and we just want the answers immediately. We want answers right away. But God is saying, wait a little longer. If He gives you His word, He's going to come through. If He makes a promise to you through His word or through whatever source, He's going to come through. His timing is not our timing. Our timing is not His timing. And His timing is always on time. So it pays to wait a little longer. I believe there's a symbolic message about the rock that they were elevated on, that they were mounted on, that they sat on, sleep on, that they were safe on. Because there's a song that goes, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. Christ in Matthew 7 says, everyone who hears His words and put them into practice is like a wise man who builds his house upon a rock. The rain came, the stream rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on a rock. But everyone who hears His words and does not put them into practice is like the foolish man who builds his house upon the sand. The rain came, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Who are you putting your trust in? And what foundation are you building your house? Your faith. A great storm is coming, and it's going to beat against everyone's house. Notice amidst this particular crisis, there was also a food crisis, and they had to find ways to survive. There was no food for 10 days. That's a long time to be without food. But you know, we already know what kept them alive. Prayer, meditation, self-discipline. Thank God they played sports, because any form of sport you play, even if you're in the gym and you have a personal trainer, any coach you have, especially as it relates to sports, it comes with some amount of discipline and perseverance and a development of the mind when you play sports. I used to play sports for some years when I worked at the bank. And so you develop this tenacity, this endurance, this perseverance. Even when you're tired, the coach pushes you to keep going, to tap into every energy you have left in your reserves. You're being pushed. And so over time, you become stronger. I had a personal trainer when I was living in California for about 3 months because I needed to bring my body to a certain level. And I was pushed beyond my limit, my comfort zone rather. And I developed this willpower, which helped me after 3 months to continue along that trajectory that He helped me build. So there's some appreciation that comes with playing sports. So in times of hardship, it's very important that we know how to command the body with the mind and not the body to the brain. It helps to go on intermediate fasting at times. So currently I do the 16-8 intermediate fasting, where I don't eat before 12 and then make sure I have my last meal by 8 p.m. You can have planned fasting from time to time to discipline the body to do without food. Not overeating is another method. So there are different ways we can discipline our bodies. This is just advice. You don't have to take my advice. But I tell you, a crisis is coming that is going to tighten our belt, if you will. An economic crisis is going to come upon the world. Never since there was a nation, the Bible says, in Daniel chapter 12, a time of trouble, the Bible calls it. So it serves us well to begin to discipline our minds and our body. Let the brain commands the body and not the body the brain. If you pay attention to the news, we all see that a crisis is coming. It's no joke. When the crisis hit, we're going to need something outside of ourselves, something outside of our families, outside of the money that we think we have to carry us in these hard times. Some of us are financially stable right now, financially well off. And believe it or not, overnight, you can lose what you think was secure. That is how unpredictable and unstable the times are. These days, you can barely plan because everything is so up in the air now. Everything is so uncertain since COVID-19. That was a rude awakening. That was something none of us saw coming, which should really sink in right now that we ought to start making certain preparation for any other unwelcome interference in our daily lives. So we need to tap into someone that is bigger than ourselves, that helps to bring hope, strength, and everything we need to weather the times that are coming. You're gonna need hope. You're gonna need self-discipline. You're gonna need prayer. You're gonna need medication. But there's medication in meditation, can I tell you? We're all going to need prayer and meditation. My next point is that we strive better in community. Because the boys were able to encourage each other, it preserved their hope, faith, whatever you want to call it. Community is what preserves faith. Community is what helps to keep hope alive. And also the community that was on the outside hoping and praying for these boys. And when we talk about community, we talk about over 10,000 people from 17 countries around the world, which included more than 100 divers, scores of rescue workers, representatives from 100 governmental agencies, like I mentioned before, 900 police officers, 2,000 soldiers. So with prayer and community effort, God had to intervene. We thrive better in communities. No man is an island. No man stands alone. I'm currently reading this devotional called Can You Help Me? On day two, the writer alluded to the fact that he can be stubborn at times because we have this tendency, especially for those of us who are very independent, that we think we can get everything done on our own. But he was saying there's something powerful about the word help because it summons the miracle. It summons the impossibility that lies in God's hands. Acknowledge that you need that advice. Acknowledge that you need that direction because you're lost. Acknowledge that you need that financial help if that's your problem. Whatever your problem, acknowledge that you need help and seek the help that you need. David said in Psalm 21, I will lift up my eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of the heaven and the earth. He didn't even say my help comes from God. He says my help comes from the Lord. There's something more personal about Lord. When God is Lord of your lives, it means that he's in charge and you involve him in your day-to-day activities. Verse 3 says, he will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. So do not be afraid to ask for help. Even at work, if you know that you're overworked and you have too much on your plate, do what you must do because stroke is not a nice thing. And if you get stroke and you're not able to work there, push you to the side and get somebody else. So listen to your body. If your head is feeling woozy or feeling funny or you're feeling some sort of strange way in your body, pay attention and respond accordingly and seek the help that you know you need. So do your best. And when you know you have done your best, then you will seek the help you need for the rest. The country of Thailand was not afraid to seek help outside of themselves. They could have had this pride to say, we don't need anybody else's help. We will get this done. But they sought help. I have a certain amount of respect for these two British guys because they volunteered their services. And out of all the divers that came to help, among those 100 or over 100 divers, They were the most instrumental in the operation, and they volunteered their service. We need to extend help when we can. So from the camaraderie of everyone on the rescue mission, the support was just unrelenting and sacrificial. And because of that, the miracles came through. The rice farmers were compensated by the government, thank God. And the parents were able to resume this birthday party that they were planning. And life continued. So I hope reflecting on this movie was a blessing to you. And if you decide to watch it on Amazon Prime, I believe you will still find it intriguing. God bless you. Thank you for listening to today's reflection. Join me next time for another episode. Until then, stay blessed.